KRG. This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Good morning. Time once again for the Medicine Ball Caravan on KRVS Lafayette Lake Charles. I'm Cecil Doyle. Once upon a time, there was a band here in Lafayette, Louisiana called Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band that sort of shone a paisley light on the area when there was not much of that going around. Recently, tapes from an album they were working on were recently discovered and have been issued overseas by two different companies this year alone. It's called the Red Day Album. We'll be listening to tracks from that, as well as visiting with the group's drummer. We're talking about Gary Simon Bertrand. He was drummer for both Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band, as well as the group that they morphed into, which was a band called Zyder Z. We'll be playing tracks from both groups and talking about Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band. But let's begin with that newly issued Red Day album. This is the title track as we begin this caravan.
Start a red.
That was the intro and Red Day from the newly issued The Red Day album by Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band, recorded in 1967, but just seeing the light of day this year, and issued by two different companies in Europe over the past few months. You're listening to The Caravan on KRVS. Weather for the listening area, about a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Heat index at about 98, 20% chance of rain overnight, and do it again tomorrow, 40% chance of precipitation. Currently it's 87 here on the campus of UL Lafayette. A brief reminder that the Cane Fire film series resumes this evening with a screening of the film Filth. It was released last year, stars James McAvoy, Jamie Bell, Imogene Poots, and was it's based on the acclaimed novel by Irvine Welsh, the guy responsible for Trainspotting. So if you've seen Trainspotting, you might know that, you know, it's not exactly the best film to take the young ones to, but it will be screening this evening, 7:30 p.m. at the James Munkus Theater at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, the Cane Fire film series. And speaking of Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band, with me in the studio is the drummer for that group and the man responsible, one of the main guys responsible for this record, Seeing the Light of Day. Welcome to the studio, Gary Simon Bertrand. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you very much.
So, Gary, tell us a little bit. First off, Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band, I told you before, that was the first group that I ever saw that I considered a real band when I was young. When I was in freshman in high school back in 1968 into 69, there was a battle of the bands at Opelousas High School gym, and I remember seeing many groups there. One of them, we talked about the Rogues, left an impression on many of us, but Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band was like the featured special guest, and so that was the first time I'd seen a real band that was put together that had the really long hair and everything. So I just can't express to you how much Thomas Edison meant to me as a young guy growing up. So anyway, just thrilled to finally meet you and see that this music has finally seen the light of day.
Well, it's an honor to meet you, and thank you so much for having me.
So tell me a little bit about the before we get to that, tell us a bit about you, Gary. Where are you from? You from the area?
Born in Lake Charles, moved to Lafayette with my grandparents in 1965. I was maybe 3 years as a drummer, arriving in 65, 3 or 4 years, and went to Judy's for about 2 weeks, and that's where I met Richard Orange.
Now, Richard was the principal singer and songwriter for most of the tracks. You guys met and you hit it off, decided to maybe take a stab at making music?
We ended up finding out that we were musicians coming back home from Judy's on the school bus, and dropped him off in one street, and I was just one street over. And I was a drummer. He was a guitar player. We got together.
What year was this?
This was 1965.
Wow. And how old were you at the time?
I was in 65. I was 14.
Wow.
Richard was 1 year younger than me, so he was 13 and 65.
So did you have an instrument yet? Were you playing yet?
I had, yeah. I had gotten a mixed collage of drums, anywhere from a Japanese snare drum to a Rogers 22-inch bass and a 9x13-inch tom, and that was my set.
Okay. Well, so the two of you met, I'm sure. Was Richard writing songs then, or were you just all of a sudden?
No, he was writing songs. I came from a kind of a jazz swing band preferences as far as listening and hitting it off, you might say. He started turning me on to Beatles and English rock and roll, which was kind of, I mean, I was familiar with it, but really wasn't that interested. But
it was new and just happening at the time.
Yeah, and he convinced me, and it was every day listening to what he had at his home, and but then we'd go back in his garage and rehearse, and just him and I, and we'd work out the tunes, and it was all good.
So when did the name Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band happen?
That happened after Richard got together. Richard was invited to play with some college guys, Clay Smith and Bobby Sanye, which were part of the original Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band lineup. And once Richard got into that, that went off well, but he wasn't happy with the drummer, and that's when he brought me in. Mm. And then that just kind of – we kind of cemented together with Clay and Bobby and went on from there.
Wow. So I guess you guys did a lot of just gigs. I mean, back then there were a lot of youth centers and sort of things like that that bands played back then. I know, you know.
Plus on back then, high school, every Friday there was a football game. And after the football game, they had what was called a victory dance. So we were always, whether we played for money or nothing, that was always available. And that was pretty much what trimmed all the fat off of, you know, from the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. When you went to play live, which we were very fortunate because of all those high school dances and elementary dances, whatever, CYOs, we were able to hone our craft a little lot better than from rehearsal.
All right.
That was a true test.
That's true.
Playing live.
So eventually he actually went in the studio and make a record. And those of you young ones out there, making a record back in the 60s, it wasn't like just going into somebody's studio. It took money. It was a major deal. So how did you guys get together to even afford studio time and press a record?
La Louisiana Records, which was run by Carol Rashu back then, you know, there was a lot of groups that were going in and out of La Louisiana Records, Persian Market, The Rogues.
I used to see all those bands in the youth centers.
Yeah. You know, the opportunity was actually here in Lafayette, which was not afforded to everyone. So
wait, Persian Market, isn't that Little Ricky?
At a later point, which made it much better.
Sorry to
no, 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 no. Little Ricky, Persian Market, yeah, okay. Wonderful drummer, great guy.
Well, we were getting to the record, the La Louisiana Studios, and recording that.
And Carol Rashu, we got together with Carol Rashu, went in the studio. We got the money from from the gigs, and I can't quite remember how much it cost to get in there, but we recorded A Common Attitude, which was the very first song we ever recorded. And then we went back in, did No One's Been Here for Weeks, and a few other copy songs and a few other original songs. And we weren't quite happy with No One's Been Here for Weeks, which is what we felt would be a good 45 release. Mm-hmm. So we went to Tyler, Texas with Robin Hood Brines, who had a really good reputation. In 4 hours, we recorded No One's Been Here for Weeks and walked away with the final product and were able to put a 45 out, which was the first 45.
And it was on the TAM label back then.
Yes, sir.
And now it has been our good friends Garrison Records over in Spain have reissued the album that we'll be talking about, the Red Day album. But in it, as an extra, they've included a reproduction of the original TAM single. Only thing, I think they got the A and B sides confused on this repressing. So originally the A side of their first single.
No One's
Been Here for Weeks. And we're going to listen to that right now, the new single version of the first Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band single.
If you don't need, come take my hand. Everyone come sing with a band. There's nobody here who won't understand. And there's no one been here for weeks. Everyone come give me a hand. Clean it up the best that you can. There's nobody here who won't understand. And there's no one been here for weeks. Say, I hope you like the same. It doesn't matter anyway. and no one cares in this whole wide world.
Run away for a while.
There's no one here today, no matter what you say.
I hope you like to stay.
It doesn't matter anyway.
They took a trip a long time ago, and where they've gone to, I don't really know. Look like there's not been a man, and there's no one be here for weeks. Rat ta 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 da da da, rat ta 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 da da da, rat ta 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 da da da. There's no one be here for weeks. Rat ta 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 da da da, rat ta 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 da da da, rat ta 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 da da da.
That sunshiny pop sound that has sort of come back into fashion, but done originally in I guess around 1967 by Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band. That's a reissue of their first single, and that tune again is no one's been here for weeks. With me in the studio, I have the drummer for Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band, Gary Simon Bertrand, and Gary, yeah, that must have been that's an incredible output for teenagers. I mean, that's some great songwriting, great production, great musicianship. Very impressive, man.
Thank you very much.
I mean, for a first stab, how did you guys get a sound like this, your first time making a record?
That's interesting. I believe a lot of that was a musicianship, you know, of course. But again, 15, 16 years old. A lot of that 45 that you just heard is give credit to Brian Robin Hood Bryans, who's was a great engineer, great producer, did singles for John Fred and the Playboys, a Union Gap, some great 60s groups that he engineered and produced. Oh. And we were very fortunate to work with him because in the studio we made some mistakes that were not aware of, and he would stop the tape and say, "Oh, yeah, Richard, you just broke an E string." And Richard was like, "What?" And reel it back, and he homed us in, and he was a really good teacher. Carried him on with learning experience for years.
How long did it take to record the single? Did you do this in one session or?
One session, start to finish, 4 hours.
Wow.
I know.
Very, very impressive. Well, I tell you, I want to move on to the flip side of that first single. And I tell you, when I was first playing this, I was trying to figure out who was singing it because you told me it was Richard. I just figured, okay, maybe this is Kim Foreman because I noticed he was credited as vocals because this sounded nothing like the other singer on the other side. This too is Richard Orange. In fact, originally I thought this was a girl singing. Tell us about the song "Common Attitude."
That was one of the very first songs he introduced to me or played for me. That was his, and we rehearsed it. We worked all the parts out, and then worked it out with the band. And we went in the studio when we did have time to go to the studio. That was the first song we ever recorded as a group, as Thomas Edison's.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's an impressive song. And whereas the first tune we heard was very radio-friendly pop, this has more of a sort of a psychedelic tinge to it.
That's what I've been told.
Here it is, "Common Attitude."
The street girls pass by. Am I going to stay here to my life? Ten years. Some wear red, too much white, 'cause they say that's the way. I wear brown, too much black, to tell night or day. Trace my lines and you'll find that my thoughts are uncertain. Give me yours and I'll fall in a garden of thorns.
Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band here on the Medicine Ball Caravan, and that was the flip side to their very first single going back around 1967, and that was a track called Common Attitude. With me in the studio, I have the drummer for Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band and the group that came out of the ashes of it, Zyder Z, with me, Gary Simon Bertrand. And Gary, yeah, that was another great track. Hard to believe that that was done. That was done at La Lou, right?
La Louisiana.
Just a couple of blocks from from right here where we're sitting. So
a stone's throw away.
Exactly. So that was a great song, and so that was out. How long was the period between the recording of this single? Now, you guys did other singles as well, because I remember the local radio station back in the day playing a version of a Flying on the Ground that Thomas Edison had recorded. That was the Neil Young Buffalo Springfield song. And you guys did. That was the first time I had ever heard the song. So whenever I think of that song, that's the version that in my mind that I always think of.
That's funny, because I forgot that we did that.
Wow.
And I don't remember when we did that.
Well, old KVOL used to play it a lot.
So I have no idea.
That's where I used to hear it back in the late 60s, 68, 69 or so. So that was recorded. Basically the question, did you do any other singles or was that it?
I believe that was it. Uh-huh. I do, you know, with the recall, with you making recall on Flying on the Ground is Wrong. I believe that's the only other single that we had released.
Okay. Well, so you eventually went in to record an album, and it was recorded and sort of never issued, and I'm going to let you tell the story about how these tapes were found and have now seen the light of day, have been released this year by none other than two record companies in Europe. So tell me about the recording. When did you guys go in to do these sessions for the Red Day album?
My recall on that was somewhere in 67. I want to say it was in the spring, end of winter, and we had Mike Daniels was a booking agent, and he had access to a small little four-track recording studio, and he invited us after hearing No One's Been Here for Weeks. That got some attention. He invited us for some free studio time, but it was just on a weekend. So we left on a Friday afternoon after school, got in Jackson, Mississippi, 8 p.m., we unloaded what equipment we did need, the Hammond B3, two flights of stairs, started recording right around midnight that Saturday, and we didn't stop recording until Sunday morning around 9 a.m., and the very last song we recorded was The Red Day.
So it was all done in one, and again, one
and
session?
On a weekend, we could not leave. The stipulation was we could not leave the studio. We were locked in, literally locked in. The only food we had was that little vending machine with peanut butter crackers and M&Ms and sodas, and that was the energy that we produced out of that on a four-track. And Mike Daniels was not that experienced in engineering, and we had a little bit of experience in recording with, you know, our ideas of what we'd like to do, and the Red Day album is that.
So, okay, so it was recorded. Now, what happened to the tapes?
The tapes, back then, I believe there weren't even cassette players back then, I don't believe, or if there was, nobody had access to it. So we had it on reel-to-reel, and we listened to it a few times with no intentions of doing anything with that tape other than just having the experience. So it got put away.
Wait, really? All those good songs just
– Put away.
Wow.
Yeah, put away.
Amazing.
Richard's a prolific writer, so those were old tunes. And
yeah,
we were moving forward to his newer stuff. So we just put it on the back burner, and it emerged I had it. It emerged, and I transferred it to cassette.
When did you think about doing this, and how were they? Did you know where they were stored?
I had a copy, my copy, which was a very poor copy, and Ricky, my brother Ricardo Johnson, is a big fan, and I wanted to get him a copy, and for him to have for his records, and I passed it on to him.
Hmm. So who did the work of remastering and mixing it? He did this? Or?
No, I brought after this whole movement started with Gerson and Gearfab, I went to La Louisiana Records with David Rosh, Carol Rosh's son, and we digitally remastered. He digitally transferred Gerson Records digitally remastered
themselves.
The Red Day.
Now, Gerson is the Spanish label that just put the album out on vinyl, and just a few months ago, maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, a British company called Gearfab released the album on CD, and it's just amazing that this is all happening just not now, all these years later. I mean, 45 years.
Well, it was my brother Ricardo. When I gave him the cassette, he just, you know, got on the computer and put two of the songs from that tape on YouTube. Both of those songs, one was called "I'll Join the Army," and the other one was "Champion." And within a couple of weeks, Gerson Record was on the phone wondering if there was any more material, and I said yes, and there it is.
There it is. So it's seeing the light of day here in 2014, but recorded in 1967. It's called the Red Day album, and again, it's out on two labels currently overseas, and definitely highly recommended. And just I don't know. This is a big deal in my life to see this record finally see the light of day, and know that you know hear more material from this group that I was so fascinated with when I was like 14 years old. I tell you, let's go to a track from the Red Day album. Now, according to they wrote some great liner notes for this Gerson release. They went into detail trying to get a lot of information about the group. But according to you, Gary, that there's this this story there about the recording of this album. They mentioned in here that you guys were locked up, but supposedly, the legend has it that you were locked up and fed psychedelics and not let out until until this record was done. But again, you tell me.
I don't know where that came from, because honestly, that didn't. We were 15, 16 years old. We knew it was all out there, but did we have access? No. Were we scared? Yes. So, to have the perception that we needed that as a tool to do the recording section.
Right. It's like you said, the age, I mean, you know.
And if it were true, I'd have no problem saying yes, right. Well, absolutely, but it's not.
But now that it's on the liner notes to the album, this is going to become the myth now.
Yeah, so, that's exactly story, it. So thanks for asking.
So just to get that straight before. Well, I tell you, let's listen to something. We're going to listen to a couple of tracks from the newly issued the Red Day album. Tell us about this tune. It's called No One's Been Here for Weeks.
No One's Been Here for Weeks?
Is that the one we were going to play, or when were we talking about?
I think we already played No One's Been Here for Weeks.
Oh, we have been. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are we going to play next? Wait, what did we talk about doing here? right, yes.
You can play it again.
No, I'm not going to play it again. What we are going to play, I think, is – let's play this tune. I want to play okay, I messed up. Where's my CD? Let us go to this tune, Alexander Graham Bell. Local musician, Chris Stafford, heard this, and I just admire Chris's taste. The fact that Chris heard the songs he heard, he was really impressed by this one. Now, tell us a little bit before we get into this. Tell us a little bit about Richard Orange. His songwriting style, I mean, you mentioned you met him. He was obviously influenced by the Beatles, especially McCartney. What kind of person was Richard? I mean,
well, Richard is a true artist. True artist in the sense of music, his writing, his photography, his artwork. He stands by what he does. And thank goodness for that, because that's what makes him an artist. He's always been he's not a quitter. He's never quit, though I've been in bands and myself, you know, just to make your point, you end up quitting. And then you're back in the band, and that's the way, you know, you get your point across. But Richard never quit. He's always moving forward, and he's always ahead of himself. He, again, like I said, he's such a prolific writer that when we would go in the studio and record, we'd finish that song, and that was, to us, that was the past. And then he'd come forward again with new material. So there was always new material even before we finished doing overdubs and on older material.
Yeah, and listening to the record, I can kind of tell that. I mean, the fact that all of these great songs just sort of sat there, and knowing songwriters in my lifetime, that's the way they are. They look at that as something, okay, we've moved on. Let's always interested in what's next, you know. So, but these songs are phenomenal, and I want to listen to the one tune from the Red Day album called Alexander Graham Bell.
1, 2, 3, 4
phone music there, Alexander Graham Bell. That's Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band going back to 1967 and a track included on the newly issued The Red Day album, available now on the Gearson label out of Spain or on CD out of the UK, out of Gear Fab Records. Gary, a great, great song. And as I mentioned, I've gotten some good buzz on this tune from other musicians in the area listening to this. So, okay, man, guys might be influencing yet another generation, the next generation of musicians here. So, great, great tune.
Thank you.
So, I want to get to one more track from the album, this one's called Hope. Now, this one is really – this was out there for 1967. I mean, when I'm thinking this was recorded right around the same time as Sgt. Pepper and all that, I mean, this sounds even more out there than what the Beatles were doing at the time, you know?
That was pretty much us, during our rehearsals and everybody's influence and – we put it all together in that one song. And this was actually the very first song that opened up the recording sessions on that midnight, Friday into Saturday. This was the first song we recorded on the Red Day album.
Wow, okay. This is Hope, again, Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band.
Thank you.
recorded in 1967, Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band, a tune called Hope, and it's included on their newly issued The Red Day album. You're listening to The Caravan here on KRVS. With me in the studio is the drummer for Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band, Gary Simon Bertrand. And Gary, a great, great tune. And I'm getting posts on Facebook from a good listener from New Orleans, Curtis Cottrell. He's reminding us that Richard also wrote tunes that were recorded by Cyndi Lauper and Jane Wiedland of the Go-Go's. So Richard, I mean, definitely still has it going. I mean,
yes, he does.
And so we'll move on from Thomas Edison's Electric Light Bulb Band. How did the group finally dissolve and go? And how did Zyder Z come into being?
Zyder Z came into being when we were all waiting for Richard to graduate. I graduated the year before him. Richard and I already had a plan on the table to leave Lafayette and move to Jackson, where there was this recording studio with our management, Leland Russell. And we just needed to put the band together that was willing to leave home and go through the paying your dues, as they say. So that's what happened. We Richard graduated. We put the band together. We lost Clay Smith from.
That's what's guys. How did Thomas Edison dissolve? Basically,
it dissolved at that point of us leaving Lafayette.
Okay,
and it dissolved there. Clay Smith was an original member for Thomas Edison. He had planned to come with us. He decided at the last minute, the 2 weeks before we left, that he was not. We replaced him with John Bonar on bass, which Thomas Edison never had a real bass player until we got John.
Okay.
That was the formation of Zyder Z.
So Zyder Z was based out of where now? What was the main?
We left Lafayette,
right.
Not as Zyder Z, as Fair Murphy Wormwood. And we were based out of Jackson, Mississippi for a year, a little over a year. And then the whole operation, management, sound company, band, went to Memphis, Tennessee, changed the name to Zyder Z, and things just started to roll from there.
And this was the early 70s or by what
this
time?
This is 1970. We left in 71. 72, we were in Memphis.
Now, these songs still, like I say, Richard's songwriting is just continuing to form and like I said, he's just I look at him as just one of the great writers in the tradition of other folks doing it at the same time, like Emmett Rhodes, like the Raspberries at the same time. We're doing just great, great music. Now, it looks like Zyder Z had the opportunity to go into two or three studios and record music, but there was a Zyder Z album, wasn't there?
A Zyder Z in 1975 was released on Columbia Records.
Wow. That impressive. I need to get it together.
Yeah, on Columbia Records.
Yeah.
That was like a feat in itself, not a subsidiary.
No. So that's a major deal right there. Now, you recorded, it looks like, in two or three different studios, and you've brought me some material that has never seen the light of day by Zyder Z. We're going to listen to two or three tracks if we have time. We're going to start off by listening to this tune called After the Shine's Gone. Tell us about this recording, who recorded it, where it was recorded.
We recorded that in 1973, Glazer Studios, Nashville. Kai Lenning being the engineer, and Kai Lenning was fairly new at his engineering experience, but he was a talent. He was, as I'd like to say, he would have been our George Martin.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, having a good engineer in a session is vital. It's important. They can make you sound good. They can make you sound bad. He had all the he was the one.
Well, it's a shame that he's never saw the light of day. I'm thinking you should maybe go to these same people and try to get the Zyder Z material put out there. We're going to give you an example of some unreleased material by Zyder Z. We're going to start off with a track called After the Shine's Gone.
Thank you.
After the Shine's Gone, that's Zyder Z. Amazing music. Gary, I can't believe that this didn't make it on the album, on the Columbia record. I mean,
again, Richard was just moving forward. It just didn't, and it was put in the back and forgotten.
This song, it gives me, as I was telling you, this gives me that same nice, warm, fuzzy feeling on the inside when I listen to it. The same feeling I got the first time I heard Pete Townsend's Pure and Easy on his first solo release. That song was just my wake-up song in the early 70s. And this, you know, if you start the day with something like this, yeah, that's going to make your day. I mean, some great songwriting, great production. Really, it's a sin. This needs to be out there.
That's your donut for your coffee.
There you go. So unreleased Zyder Z here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. We're going to listen to another. I think we have time for at least another track from Zyder Z. But tell us a little bit about what happened to Zyder. How long was Zyder Z in existence? What finally dissolved that group?
71 initially through. My tenure ended in summer of 74, and I believe the group went on through different morphings, different musicians, up until 76. And then it was Richard Orange and Z, and then that all disbanded. But Richard's put out several other CDs,
yes,
his own.
I saw he has a website. You can go to richardorange.com.
Yeah, and just some really great, great songs if your listeners are interested in picking up more of this style of music.
I tell you what, I'd love to talk to Richard someday. I mean, I'm just so impressed by his work. He's like one of these lost geniuses. I think he totally went under the radar and definitely needs to be recognized. And
yes,
Hopefully these releases will do that. And that's why I'm hoping maybe someone will have the gumption to put out the Zyder Z material sometime soon. Let's listen to this track. I mean, as I said, that just sounded like great wake-up music. This song here, Lana, this should have been a hit single. I mean, when I hear it, it sounds like I've heard the song my whole life. I mean, it sounds – not that it's repetitive of everything else, but it just has such a good feeling. I felt like I've known this song. First time I put it on, it's like, man, I've known this song, you know.
He wrote this back in 71, 72, and it was one of our early rehearsed songs in Jackson, Mississippi that we went on to record at TMI Studios.
Let's listen to it.
Smoking man, and I'm working as hard. And someday I'll see you in London, darling, with me. And someday I'll see you in London, darling, with me.
Cider Z, here on the Caravan. Gary Simon Bertrand, thanks so much for dropping by. Great, great records. Again, the Red Day album available right now. I'm Cecil Doyle. Have a great day. We'll do